Just Win Baby, Commitment to Excellence, the famed Silver and Black, the Holy Roller, Goes to the Post, the Immaculate Reception. Time never really stops for the great ones.
Tales of greatness. Tales of legend. Tales that define our very existence as fans. Some tales are of epic proportion. Some tales are heartbreaking memories of missed opportunity. Raider Nation is full of these tales. Let's take a journey through the past and present and relive the Raiders' adventure in the NFL. Here's Swag Jeff and Murph coming to you live from the dungeons of Murph's Fan Cave.
The indestructible Jim Otto, George Blanda, the greatest clutch player the game has ever known, Willie Brown, the magnificent cornerback, Gene Upshaw, Ted Hendricks, and of course, the magnificent Art Shell. And then you take Tom Flores, the star player who coached us to two Super Bowls. Let me take you back a few years to Frank Yule Field, to the Oakland Coliseum, to the Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum, relive the moments of the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. To those of us who saw you battle to the top, we will never forget you. You know, Raider football was always emotional. We loved to take those memorable trips throughout the league, and we were hated, we were feared, but we were respected.
These are our moments. These are our stories. These are Tales from the Nation.
What is up, Raider Nation? Your buddy Murph back once again for a long lost show we used to do around here on the Murph's Fan Cave Network. And this is the infamous Tales from the Nation. And of course, I can't do this show. We've only got one co-host to this show. You got one host and you only got one co-host, and that is Swag Jeff.
Yeah, absolutely it is. What's up, man?
Not much, brother. How are you?
Oh my gosh, I'm so good. I feel like we haven't done a Tales from the Nation in, I don't know, like 37 years or something.
It's been
like
37 years, and we've had, we had like Matuzak. We were going to do a Matuzak episode. We had a couple other things, but then lo and behold, this trailer comes out a couple weeks ago, and it is Al Davis versus the NFL, and you and I immediately lit up, and we were like, oh my gosh, we got to do a show. We got to do a Tales from the Nation show about Al versus the NFL.
Absolutely, yeah. It lit a fire under our ass because it had been too long since a Tales from the Nation. So here we are today, Murph.
So here we are today. We're going to do a little Tales from the Nation, and we're going to talk about Al versus the NFL. Now, the goal of this show is not to... Not like ESPN's worried about us, but we don't want to give you like a bunch of repetitive content and like, you know, basically tell you, maybe not like share the exact same stories of what we think you're going to see, but maybe just kind of speculate a little bit about maybe some of the where ESPN's going to kind of go off a little bit, and then to really just give you a primer, like give you, assuming that the special itself is going to take place during the heyday of the lawsuit of Al Davis against the NFL, against Pete Rozelle, late 70s, early 80s, that carried on really to like 89, I think. What happened before that, though? What's the backstory? What led up to all of that? Because frankly, the bottom line is that this is really a story of two guys, right, Jeff?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's Al Davis. You know, they call it Al Davis versus the NFL, but it's Al Davis versus Pete Rozelle.
Absolutely. You know? These guys had an absolute ongoing, feud. They did not like each other for a litany of different reasons, and we're going to get into that kind of stuff. And so, hopefully, we'll set you up with some good info going in to this Al versus the NFL, which our show is going to premiere tonight, which is Sunday night. So that means that what is it, Wednesday or Thursday that it actually comes out, Jeff?
Thursday.
Okay. Thursday on ESPN 30 for 30. And so we're going to hopefully get you set up for that. All right. So before we get into it, let's go ahead and check out the trailer. Let's listen to the trailer of Al versus the NFL.
We're living in a sports world that owes a debt of gratitude to two sworn enemies.
Oakland Raiders president Al Davis.
I turned the Raiders into the finest organization in sports. 8 division titles, 7 conference title games.
NFL Commissioner Pete Rozelle,
the best commissioner of any sport in that time.
Do you really believe that?
I know it.
Pete Rozelle and my father
They were the yin and the yang.
My differences with Al developed over business matters.
The Raiders are suing the NFL in federal court, accusing the league of restraining competition.
This could have been settled if it were not for personal animosities.
Al Davis seems to be your genuine enemy.
Every legal attack undermines the league, and that would include the commissioner.
The trial will decide whether football's Oakland Raiders may move to Los Angeles, which could influence the whole geography of professional sports.
There's only one thing that matters is who wins. You have to win.
Is he a genius or a con man?
Al Davis is a gutter fighter.
He's kind of a...
Al Davis will do anything to beat you.
Just win, baby.
Touchdown, Raiders! Holy Toledo!
This is the dawn of a new era. The Las Vegas Raiders.
I don't believe it!
No one saw coming except me.
Oh my gosh, dude, it's so good.
That gets you jazzed up, man. Oh my gosh, I'm fired up.
Absolutely. So give me some, what are some things about the trailer, man, that stands out to you? Well, of course, we couldn't feature the video there, but just the audio of it, or what about the trailer fires you up, Jeff?
Hearing the old calls, hearing Al Davis and all that stuff, and just everyone knew in the league who the Raiders were and who Al Davis was, and he was going to win by any means necessary. And, you know, just being a fairly new Raider fan, you know, that's still just an unbelievable thing. And, you know, it's, I can't wait to watch it, and I can't wait to talk about it with you today, Murph.
Awesome, man. Yeah, it's going to be fun. So a couple things interesting that stood out to me there was that, yeah, I love hearing the old clips, which this thing's going to be loaded with. But I also noticed that, like, there's one Al Davis voiceover in there where he starts listing off like his championships and all that stuff. And then there's the Pete Rozelle thing. That's not their voices. Those are voice doubles. And so I'm wondering if we're going to see I know we're going to hear voice doubles. So basically like reenactments, but I wonder if, you know, nowadays, look, ESPN is part of the Disney company. Disney is really good at, you know, the Star Wars movie Rogue One. They literally brought Peter Cushing back to life. They've brought, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen it, turn this off or hit the mute button right now about The Mandalorian Season 2. Have you seen it, Jeff?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. They brought Luke Skywalker back to life. They've brought Carrie Fisher back to life. Like, they made Robert Downey Jr. young. They made Nick Fury young. Like, that's what the Disney company does. I would not be surprised if we saw some Pete Rozelle, Al Davis, kind of like reenactments via computer CGI kind of vibe, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and another thing that stands out to me, if you don't really follow the story and don't know the story, you know, this hatred for these two guys for each other was more than business. It was personal as well. And you could tell by, you know, like you said, Murph, they're both listing all the things that they've done. I'm the best commissioner. I've created the best team in football, all that stuff. So it's two egos going head to head. It's unbelievable.
It absolutely, this feud is one of the best that the NFL has ever had. And just ruthless too, the way that Al Davis was. Like, I love you hear Howard Cosell in there and part of that voiceover, and he's calling Al Davis is a gutter fighter. Like, I love, like, I never heard that term before. That's such a Cosell thing to say, but like, a gutter fighter, like, just will at any and all costs, man. You know what I mean? So gonna be a lot of fun. So let's start to get into a little bit. Let's kind of paint the overall picture, what it looks like. So here's, I've got a timeline for you. So here's the timeline for the Raiders versus the NFL, not Al, but the actual Raiders themselves versus the NFL through the years. I'm gonna give you the chronology of the lawsuits. Okay. Over a 21 year history, this went on for, okay. Actually, and more, you could even, I'm only giving you the list up to 2001. If you went up to just a few years ago, City of Oakland, all that, suing the Raiders, like, you could keep this thing going. But I just gave you the Al Davis portion of it going up to 2001. So in 1980, Raiders and Al Davis joined the Los Angeles Coliseum antitrust suit against the NFL in Los Angeles. So the original trial, that was in 1980. The original trial took place in 81, and it was declared a hung jury. They couldn't come up with a decision. So it was rekindled in 1982, and the Raiders in the LA Coliseum went to retrial of the antitrust lawsuit against the NFL in LA. And before any judgment, the Raiders just moved. They just left Oakland and went to LA. Okay. So antitrust. So for those of you, I'll save you all the boring rhetoric. Jeff and I deal with it in our day jobs, but antitrust basically is price fixing or market fixing. That like, it keeps you from having like, if being the, like the sole, distributor and or provider for a certain kind of content in a particular market. So like if I'm a manufacturer and Jeff is a distributor, I can't tell him, hey, only distribute my product and you have to charge this much money, right?
That's exactly,
is that a easy way to explain it, Jeff?
Yeah, that's what we do.
It's what we do. I can't tell you what to charge. Okay, I can't tell you what to do. So basically an antitrust lawsuit says, you know, you're not allowing a free market to happen. So the Raiders are saying, you're not allowing a free market. If Oakland can't take care of us, I want to go to Los Angeles, and you keeping me here, that is antitrust. You're telling me that I have to do it a certain way, and you can't do that, okay? So that's antitrust. So so they move in 1982. 83, the Raiders were awarded $35 million from the NFL in damages as a portion of that antitrust suit. The NFL later paid the Raiders an additional $18 million in that settlement. That's in 83. Then you go, and that's, I think that's kind of about what we're going to see in this special. But yes, then just real quickly, in 1986, Al Davis testified for the USFL in its antitrust lawsuit against the NFL. And a New York jury voted for the USFL on one of nine counts and awarded it actually $1. If you're familiar with that story. But the thing that's unique about this is that the reason Al Davis testified for the USFL and then in that lawsuit from the USFL against the NFL, all 31 teams in the NFL were lobbied against. One team was left out. Guess what team that was?
Well, of course,
it was the Raiders.
Absolutely.
Because Al Davis was like, go ahead, you go get the NFL. I'll help you do it. Like, dude was a freaking, he was ruthless. So then in 95, the NFL sues the Raiders in Los Angeles over their refusal to share the Oakland revenues. And then at that point, the Raiders return to Oakland. And then it just goes on and on. And then the Oakland stuff goes on. And I'll save you all the boringness of the timeline. But just know this, it goes on and on and on and on. So reason for all this, as we mentioned kind of at the top, Pete Rozelle, Al Davis, two original NFL and Al Davis as an AFL commissioner, owners, right? Or not owner, but Al Davis became an owner, started off as a coach. But the history started with these two guys really early on. You want to talk to any of that, Jeff, about the kind of the early days, like the early 60s and stuff?
Well, you know, I mean, you mean just actually the AFL itself?
Yeah, like where, like, okay, because like the Raiders started off like they were one of the original franchises, right? But Al Davis was not an owner. He was a coach of the Los Angeles Chargers then, one of the other eight inaugural teams in the league. And Al Davis kind of worked his way into eventually becoming the then head coach of the Oakland Raiders.
Exactly. Yes.
So one of the things that's interesting about Al's rise in terms of, especially when it comes to like these lawsuits and things, did you know that the first lawsuit as a member of the then AFL, the first lawsuit that Al Davis was ever a part of was of his own with his own team? Did you know this?
I did not know that.
All right. So what happened was Al Davis entered into a partnership deal with Ed McGaugh, and I forget the other guy's name. It's not important. But Ed McGaugh and Al were really tight, and Al decided he wanted to have full control of the Raiders. He didn't want to be just part of it. He wanted to be the managing general partner, which is ultimately what his title ended up being, right?
Right.
So Ed McGaugh signed off on it, but this other guy didn't. So guess what Al Davis did?
He sued him.
He sued him. And guess what?
He won.
He won. And he became the managing general partner. So this is in like, don't hold me to this. It's not my notes. I got so many freaking pages of notes. But basically it was like 63, I think, because the Raiders came into inception in 60. Then I think like 63 was Al Davis suing to take ownership of the Raiders. So that was the very first lawsuit like he started off with. So you have this league, you have the AFL up and coming, you have the NFL long established, right? Pete Rozelle is the commissioner of the National Football League. Al Davis is the owner of the Raiders and then eventually became the commissioner of the AFL.
Correct.
So there was a rivalry forming between these two leagues because there were competing for players. Do you know about any of this?
I do.
Talk about it.
I do. So, you know, so the NFL obviously had, you know, the elite talent and, you know, and Al Davis as commissioner of the AFL started poaching players. He started poaching quarterbacks and started getting really good players. And, you know, and they started talking about a merger and all that stuff. And Al Davis said, no, to use his words, basically, he said, we got the NFL by the balls. You know, we're in control here. We're getting more and more players. And, you know, if there's going to be any kind of merger, you know, we're going to be getting a lot of money out of this. And, you know, the merger will become the AFL and all that stuff. And, you know, and then, of course, the, you know, behind the scenes merger happened with Al Davis knowing.
Absolutely. So it gets really, this is where it gets, starts getting really ugly. So Al Davis was always had just a shrewd eye for talent. He just always did. When you go back to his Chargers days, he signed Lance Allworth. For those of you who don't know Lance Allworth, Google him. One of the best players, one of the best pass catchers the NFL's ever seen. Al Davis signed him, wide receiver, signed him out. I forget what college he went to, but signed him out like on the playing field after his last college game before he could ever get drafted by the NFL and to get him into the AFL to get him to go play for the Chargers. And in fact, when Allworth was inducted in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, guess who inducted him? Freaking Al Davis, right? So he always had this eye for talent. And so he did, as Jeff said, he challenged the NFL widely on acquisition of talent. And now back in those days, players were making between like 11 grand and like 38 grand a year, right? Like not a lot of money. Okay. But Al knew that in order to get his league more and more viable, he needed to have more and more talent. So he kind of took that military background that he had and it was a winner die at all costs kind of a thing. So basically he started a war with the NFL in order to acquire different players. So the AFL had expanded into Miami and they just signed a new $36 million deal after the expansion with NBC. So like they had money. Okay. So Al Davis and the AFL had a lot of money. So they just started chucking money at a bunch of players. Okay. Pete Gogolak was the first name that kind of came out of this. He was a kicker for the Buffalo Bills. And it was the first time that like there became a bidding war between the two, leagues. But Al really started getting hot and heavy when he signed, the Los Angeles Rams at the time, their quarterback, Roman Gabriel, they signed him to a 4-year deal worth $400,000. And I just told you, these guys are making between 11 and 38 grand a year, signed him to a $400,000 contract over 4 years. So right after that, the Houston Oilers took San Francisco then quarterback, John Brody, to a 3-year deal for $500,000.
Wow.
The Niners' previous offer was for 40 grand a year to up him from the 38 he was making. So like all of a sudden Al Davis kicked off this thing. Like they kind of had this like gentleman's agreement between them. And finally Al was just like, F it. We got all this extra money. We're going to flood it at the freaking players. And not only did he start signing guys, but other teams started following suit. So it started this like bidding war for NFL players, right? So basically like it created this high, obviously, big amount of conflict between the two leagues. Well, as Jeff mentioned a minute ago, unbeknownst to Al, during this time, what was Pete Rozelle doing with then Lamar Hunt from the Chiefs, Jeff?
Yeah, he was meeting with him behind Al's back to try to peacefully make a merger. You know, and because they knew that Al wasn't going to go for it.
Absolutely, because Al had him by the cojones, right? Al had, and the AFL were building an advantage over the NFL. And I think that in response to Al's actions, they were afraid. They were afraid of Al. They were afraid of the AFL, and they had to merge. Now, why the Hunts and the Chiefs, and I think it was like Tech Strength, like there was a couple others that were in on it as well. What they were, what's that?
Because it was the Chiefs.
Because it was the Chiefs. But like what they were afraid of, like, I don't know, I'll never understand that. But if you really want to get into it, this is where the Raiders-Chiefs rivalry really comes from. Like, these two families despised each other. Like, there was no love, and there was no love between Al and a lot of different franchises, but this is one of the big reasons why, was because, or was it Clark Hunt? I can see him, Lamar Hunt. I think it was Clark Hunt. But anyways, went in there and negotiated this thing right out from under Al. So in this time, this frenzy of contracts, Hunt sends word to Al Davis asking that the signing cease and that he had his reasons. So of course, Al Davis refuses. His rationale was that if somebody like John Brody and Roman Gabriel were already signed, the AFL's bargaining power was greater with a Star Players Inc. than with blank contracts and no players under wraps. And so the announced signings to these exorbitant contracts, they continued on. Okay. So right after that, like, basically it forced their hand. They were afraid of Al, and they decided to go ahead and ink this deal. So on, this is on May 30th, of 63, Hunt and Tech Schramm. Okay, so Schramm also they hammered out a 6-page deal, finally briefing the rest of the AFL on the merger. All they had to do was get it approved by fellow AFL owners. And on June 7th of 63, they went ahead and locked it up. So to say Al Davis was pissed off is quite the understatement. So not only did he feel resentment towards some of his fellow owners, but there begins the real feud between him and Pete Rozelle, right?
Absolutely. You know, because when the AFL and the NFL merged, Pete Rozelle was voted to be the commissioner of the whole thing. And Al Davis didn't like that because he wanted to be the commissioner.
Yeah. And so, And so then what happened? They passed him up, right?
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. So there began, you know, the huge rivalry that, you know, lasted for 30 plus years.
Absolutely. So, some really interesting stuff there, man. Like, you know, Al Davis's moves and the Maverick and the innovation and all that stuff started so long ago. Like, I mean, literally he had two leagues afraid of him. Like, I mean, that's the kind of guy he was, because he was so outside the box and so separate and different from, you know, like Al Davis, like, you know, he was, these other guys were like oil tycoons and businessmen of other business, whatever, you know, industries and whatnot. Al Davis was a football guy. The end. Like, this was his business. When you listen to, you know, testimonies from a lot of his confidants and, you know, people from like Amy Trask, like, the guy would watch film like 360 days a year. Like, he was literally tore up and consumed with football 24/7. Did you know he didn't even live in the house with his wife and kids? Did you know that, Jeff?
I did not know that.
He lived in an apartment in Marina Del Rey, and the rest of the family lived in like the East Bay somewhere. And he just freaking lived there. And then he would go to the facility every day. That's all he did. Like,
wow.
The first time Al Davis ever went to Europe was when the Raiders played over there. Like, all this guy did was live and breathe and eat football and Raider football on not only in acquiring his own talent and studying his own players and prospects, but dissecting players like Elway and whatever, like trying to figure out how to beat them. Like, just fascinating.
Stand right there on their sideline and watch them practice.
That's right.
You know, I mean, what was it? I think Mike Shanahan of the Broncos at the time, you know, he had to like chase Davis off because he was standing at midfield just watching him practice.
It's crazy, man. Like Al Davis was just such a, I mean, what an amazing human being in terms of like what he's meant to this sport. Like, you know, we talk about it all the time around here, right? But I think it's way understated in the terms of the history of the league. I'm thinking, like, I don't want to like get too overdramatic here, but what we just talked about, like him doing what he did to challenge and to put, like he had the NFL on the ropes. Like no one does that. No one pushes the NFL around nowadays. Can you imagine one guy putting the entire league up against the wall to where they're like flailing to make a deal so this one guy doesn't dominate the whole damn thing? Like that would never happen in today's NFL.
Yep. Absolutely. Well, you know, and I think the Raiders still pay for that a little bit. At least that's a conspiracy, you know, that still to this day, you know, we don't get the calls. You know what I mean?
You know, there's a lot to that, man. And there's a lot to that. And you know, could that have been Al's paranoia? You know, I don't know, but I know this. We got more bum calls in the most key of situations than any other team in the history of the league. From, you know, obviously the tuck rule to the non-fumble to the immaculate deception to like, there's so many things that have cost us games. And, you know, Al Davis was right to feel that way. And you can't tell me that with as much animosity that was brewed up and pointed towards him from the league itself, that didn't trickle to officiating. I don't see how it couldn't, right?
Yep. I totally agree with you.
So, all right, so let's get into this thing here. So there's kind of the history, right? That's hopefully the buffer to so you guys kind of see where this thing is coming from. And then what I think we're going to see when we flip on the TV on Thursday night, we're going to see like probably a little bit of background. I hope we do. But basically, they're going to get into the actual Al versus the NFL, which is the lawsuit. I think that to me, that's what it feels like, is that it's going to be lesser about Al is the AFL and more Al is part of the NFL versus the NFL. Is that, what do you think, Jeff?
I totally agree with that, you know, because, you know, I'm interested to see how they take it, who they're going to play as the villain, you know?
Yeah, that's interesting too, right? Because you got to have a good guy and a bad guy. I wonder who the bad guy is going to be. I wonder if they're going to play that as Al.
Yeah. You know, I mean, why wouldn't they, you know? I mean, it seems fitting. You know, he's been the bad guy, and the Raiders have been the villains of the NFL for as long as I can remember.
Yeah, since 1963.
You know? Right, exactly.
Yeah. So, okay, yeah, so it's going to be interesting. So I think so, too. I think we're going to see, they might touch on a little bit, but I think the gist of it is going to be more of this era, really late 70, like 79 to like 84, 85 in there, something like that. I think that's really what we're going to see.
I guess, yeah.
So to give you an idea, so this is all, of course, it's all centered around Al always wanting a stadium. Like Al wanted, when he was in Oakland, he wanted to move to LA because he wanted a stadium. When he was in LA, he wanted to move to, you know, back to Oakland because he wanted a stadium. He wanted to move back to LA again because he wanted to stay. Like all the things are about Al wanting a stadium. But Jeff, did you even know this? That even before that, all the way back to those early Raider days, and I didn't know this. This was a new thing that I actually uncovered going through all of our notes to set the show up. The first time Al chased a stadium was back then in 1963. Because when Al Davis took over, so this is what the article states, Al Davis immediately cleaned house on the roster when he took possession, as well as the front office. He also began a campaign for a proper stadium since the Raiders had played most of their home games across the bay in San Francisco. He also got rid of the gold and black uniforms, which originally were bought, used from the University of Pacific. He liked the look of the black uniforms because he thought it made players look larger and added silver instead of gold. There you go. So like all the way back, Al Davis wanted a nice place to play.
And well, yeah, who wouldn't?
And sadly, like, I think ultimately too, like before we get into more of the meat of this, that might've been the tragedy of his life, that he died in 2011 and in 2021, where were they playing, Jeff?
He got a new stadium.
He got a new stadium 10 years after he died.
Yep.
And no one got to sit in it.
and no one got to send it. Well, I think some fans from Las Vegas State University got to, I think 5,000 of them got to go and watch their college play.
Oh, the UNLV.
Yeah, UNLV.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Okay, good deal. Yeah, so, but not for the Raiders.
No.
Ain't nobody in there. Except Marcel Reese and, like, Ice Cube or something. Like, there's been a handful of people in there.
Yeah, Mark Davis isn't even in there.
Yeah, Mark Davis isn't even going, man. So, yeah, so really, the irony of all of that is just, that's insane, too.
It's crazy.
So here we go. So, back in 79, Al wants to move the Raiders to LA, and because he was displeased with the Coliseum after Oakland, Alameda County, and the Coliseum Commission back then, they backed out of a deal that they had already negotiated. Sound familiar? History has a way of repeating itself, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So he signed a memorandum of agreement, which required 3/4 approval by league owners for his move to Los Angeles to be approved. The owners voted unanimously against Al, and then 5 of them abstained. So, of course, in classic Al Davis style, he tries to move the team anyways, but he was blocked by an injunction. So that's when Al joined the antitrust lawsuit filed by the LA Memorial Coliseum and filed the antitrust lawsuit of his own. And that's when he went ahead and just picked up and moved the frickin' Raiders anyways, right? So this starts in 79. So you know about this history, right? We've talked about this history between him and Roselle. Now, Roselle is the longtime commissioner now at this point of the NFL, and it's ugly between these two guys now. It was ugly before, and now Al brings these lawsuits and all this stuff around, and it's getting uglier. Well, don't you know, Al Davis's players loved him, Jeff, and this is one of my favorite little, like, side stories around this whole thing is, you know, Al's, any of the Hall of Fame players, like I mentioned, Lance Allworth and so many others, always had Al induct him into the Hall of Fame. Al was such a widely respected owner and just champion for athletes of all backgrounds, all, you know, ethnicities, all just such an amazing human being that everyone had the highest levels of respect for Al. So the players had his back through this whole thing. So here's what's funny. So the Raiders go to the AFC Championship in 81. We just talked about the 40-year anniversary of the Cinderella Champions, the first team to ever win it as a wild card. So in that AFC Championship game, Gene Upshaw, who at that point, he was always an offensive line, always the left guard for the Raiders, had a 15-year career with the Raiders, went on to be the player's representative. I mean, just an amazing, not only athlete, but an amazing ambassador and just he's on my Mount Rushmore of all time greatest Raiders. But anyway, so Gene made it clear to the Raiders, to the team, as of the leader of the Raiders, everybody pointed Stabler, and of course then Plunkett was the quarterback, but really Upshaw was the leader of the Raiders for the entire time that he was there. And he made it clear to everybody that they were out for revenge. And Gene Upshaw got up in front of the team and said, "I want to see Pete Rozelle come into this locker room. I want to see him come into this locker room and present us the Super Bowl trophy. I guarantee when he walks into our locker room, he's going to get booed, and I'm going to be the one leading the boos." Like, don't you love that, dude?
I love that. Yeah, he was the first guy to boo the commissioner, and we've been doing it ever since. I love it.
It's so good, man. So when the Raiders get to New Orleans, okay, which is where the Super Bowl was that year, so Upshaw says all this at the AFC Championship game. They go to New Orleans. Well, that year, the teams practiced in a stadium where the Super Bowl was being played, obviously in the Superdome, and the league painted footballs on the 25-yard line with Pete Rozelle's signature on them, like is kind of like a field decoration kind of thing, right?
Okay.
So what Gene Upshaw took to start doing was that because they were actually practicing on the field that they were playing on, Gene would go over and with his cleat stomp out Pete Rozelle's name off of these footballs every time the Raiders would go out and practice. Like,
oh, I love that.
Isn't that some of the most Raider stuff you ever heard, Jeff?
Yeah, that's the most Raider thing I've heard ever. Yes, that's unbelievable.
Literally stomping the fool's name out of existence.
Yes. Like,
it's so good, man. So good. So, so ultimately, the trial lasted, you know, a few years, and ultimately the Raiders won out. Ultimately, Al Davis won out. The NFL and the Raiders settled in a reached a settlement for the 11-year-old antitrust suit. Wait a minute, hold on. Let me get my notes right here. Yes. Okay. So the judgment was rendered against the league in 1983. Excuse me. There we go. Sorry. Because it took them 11 years to finally work out because remember I said the Raiders got that extra money and whatever. The original settlement was for $34.6 million. Then it took them that time. But ultimately, they ruled in the Raiders' favor and Al Davis's favor. So the announcement of the settlement by U.S. Circuit Judge Henry Pregerson said the amount and other details were being placed under seal at the request of the two parties, but it was learned that the Raiders would get a base sum of $18 million plus the interest. So Raiders spokeswoman at the time, Sue Turner, estimated they would eventually get about $20 million. So when this thing was finally done, Pete Rozelle was relieved. The commissioner still at the time expressed his relief that the case was finally over, while Al Davis took a little bit of a joy, to the victory. He said, obviously, the whole matter was very distasteful. Rozelle declared, it's nice to have it behind us. Davis said, unfortunately, there's just no satisfaction in winning these types of lawsuits. So really interesting there, the way that these guys kind of like closed it out. It was really bittersweet because I think because it took so long neither one of them came out like a real clear-cut winner. And I'm wondering how the special is going to play that. Now, granted, the Raiders got that money in the settlement, but it wasn't what they wanted. And it took so long to get what that settlement actually was. And frankly, that's a pittance, right? That's nothing in NFL dollars. That's not much.
At all.
Who do you think, Jeff, was the kind of the quote winner in this? Do you think the Raiders and Al Davis actually won?
You know, I mean, if you want to declare a winner, I guess you could say, you know, but yeah, like you said, I mean, it didn't really ever seem like, I mean, it was resolved and yes, but it really, yeah, no one got what they wanted. And, you know, and that's, and that probably pissed Al Davis off too. You know, because just win, baby. You know, he wanted to win. He wanted to be the clear-cut winner. And, you know, when, you know, I mean, yes, he won, but he didn't really win. So, yeah, I'm with you. You know, I mean, it, you know, it was resolved, but, you know, just kind of.
Well, you know, like Al Davis is also famous for saying, our goal is not to win. Our goal is to dominate. Like,
yes.
He didn't want to just win the lawsuit. He wanted to dominate the NFL. He wanted to, you know what I'm saying? Like, that was what his goal was there. And I don't think he quite attained his goal, but bottom line though, that he won, like he did win the lawsuit, you know, and when you look at the W column, it doesn't win if you win by one or you win by, you know, 35 million, like a W is a W. So, we've got a couple audio clips for you here. These are interesting. So during this whole time, and I hope they explore this in the special, during this whole time of this lawsuit, well, guess what the Raiders did twice, Jeff?
They won two Super Bowls.
They won two freaking Super Bowls. And so who hands the owner the trophy?
Oh, that was sweeter than any money that the NFL could have given to Al Davis was for Pete Rozelle to give him a Lombardi trophy.
Right? So the commissioner hands him the trophy now. So, and he had to do it twice, right? So he had to do it in 81 and had to do it then in 84. And so what's really interesting is that the first time, so this, I'm going to play you the audio and of course you can't see this, but, and it's real kind of a muddy thing from, it's an old broadcast going back to 1981, but it's really interesting that here you have like this crowd of players, right? And you'll hear the entrance when Al Davis comes in. They just go nuts, right? On the heels of like what Upshaw's comments were. I'm going to boo the commissioner, but man, they just freaking raised Al Davis up, man. But then so the commissioner has to hand him the trophy. Well, and now you see him, they like hand him the trophy with one hand and they shake hands with the other, right?
Right.
Not this time. Freaking Rozelle has got two hands death gripped onto that freaking trophy. And my favorite is there's a still shot of Pete Rozelle kind of looking over at Davis with two hands holding up the trophy. And Al's not even looking at him. He's looking down at the ground and he's got the biggest freaking smile on his face because he knows this fool is getting ready to hand him trophy. It's so awesome. But let's check in with the audio of it, man, so you guys can at least hear it.
Congratulations. Thank you. Congratulations, Al. Outstanding. Commissioner Pete Rozelle, I know you've got a presentation to do.
Jesus, I wanted it.
Became, of course, the first wild card to win the Super Bowl. I think it's a tremendous compliment to the organization because you had to win four postseason games. Today, of course, was the big one, the Super Bowl. I think it's a great credit to you for putting this team together. I think that Tom Flores clearly did one of the great coaching jobs in recent years, all season, and particularly today. And it's a credit to some marvelous, dedicated athletes, especially Jim Plunkett and that offensive line today.
All right.
You've earned it. Congratulations.
Al?
All right, Pete, all right.
Thanks very much.
Al, you finally got the mic.
Thanks very much, Commissioner. You know, when you look back at the years of glory of the Oakland Raiders, but this was our finest hour. This was the finest hour in the history of the Oakland Raiders. To Tom Flores, the coaches, and the great athletes, you were magnificent out there today. You really were. The years will go on. We owe a great tribute to all our alumni all over the country, the great fans. And we want to welcome back the hostages to the United States. And take pride and be proud. Your commitment to excellence and your will to win will endure forever. You were magnificent.
Congratulations. Is this one any sweeter than the one 4 years ago?
Well, this has been the sweetest because it's our finest hour. And I'm just so proud of everyone here. Just a great staff. Just great coaching.
I've got to ask you, can it be displayed as proudly in Oakland as Los Angeles?
Oh, I don't want to get into that, Brian. Now, I don't think that anyone should ever take away from the great game and the great achievement of our players.
Al, congratulations
again. Thank you very much. I wish Ed McGarwood here. He's coming down right now. He's my general partner. And just a super guy, and we're all so proud of this great trophy once again. Hi, Captain Gene.
Thank you, Al. Commissioner.
I love that. Bryant squeaks that one in there. Is it as sweet in Oakland as it is in L.A.?
I
don't
want to talk about that.
Yeah. but that's a testament, too, to, like, Al keeping it, like, he kept it about his players, man, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it wasn't about where they were playing. It was one of the greatest Raider games ever. And, you know, and he wanted to share that with his team, not getting into all the mumbo jumbo. You know, he had his moment when Rozelle gave him the trophy.
Exactly. And I love it. You hear Upshaw and you hear a couple other guys and they're yelling genius at him. Like,
well, yeah.
Isn't that like, you don't hear that. You just don't see that anymore or ever. Like, you don't see, how many times have we watched Belichick get handed a trophy? You don't hear Patriots screaming genius. You know what I'm saying? Like genius, like it's like one thing to cheer, but they're calling him a genius. Like,
yeah,
that, like, does that strike you? Like it strikes me.
Yeah. I mean, because it, you know, I mean, I don't think any GM or anyone a part of any other organization had the respect that the Raiders had for Al Davis. I mean, you just don't see it. You know, I don't think I've ever seen it. I mean, maybe even in any sport.
That's the thing. It's such a unique relationship that he had with his players, man. So, all right, we're going to hit one more before we get out of here. We're going to fast forward to Super Bowl 18. So this is the second time Pete Rozelle had to hand him the trophy. This is a really long clip. I might jump around a little bit in the beginning to kind of get you to the presentation portion of it. But again, it's the same cast of characters. It's except instead of Bryant Gumbel, you now have Brent Musburger, who's now the Raiders play-by-play announcer. You have Brent Musburger announcing, calling it, and you got Al Davis, you got Tom Flores, and you got freaking Pete Rozelle. So, and we got Madden and Summerall calling the game, man. This is post-Black Sunday. This is beautiful.
Final score, the Raiders 38 and the Washington Redskins 9, and the
totally dominating Raider team. 38-9. Super Bowl 18 will continue after this word from your local station.
Mets, that's the big. We are inside the locker room and Al Davis embracing Tom Flores. This is the first time they have met since the victory. Al, congratulations. Let us start out with the trophy presentation for Tom Flores and Al Davis. And here's the commissioner, Pete Rozelle. Pete?
Well, the Raiders, I think everyone would say, beat a fine football team today. The Redskins had won 31 of the last 34 games. And I think that it was clearly a very dominant win. You had scoring by your offense, by your defense, and by your special teams. And I think that while it's hard to mention just one, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the great job that Marcus Allen did in becoming the most valuable player of the game. And Tom, I think you certainly established yourself as one of the great coaches in the league.
Thank you.
Your consistent record of winning over the years, tremendous. And Al, you're be congratulated for putting this cast together. You and the Raider management, you put together a great, great football team, and they sure showed it today. Congratulations.
Just win, baby.
So good.
Well, I just want to say 2 years ago when we came to Los Angeles, I really believed that the greatness of the Raiders would be in its future. And with all the great teams we've had, I think today that this organization, this team, this coaching staff dominated so decisively that two things must be said. Not only, in my opinion, are you the greatest Raider team of all time, I think you rank with the great teams of all time that have ever played any professional sport.
Ah! And by the way, F you, Pete.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
Oh, man. So, all right. So, Jeff, so there's the two presentations. I got one more side note for you here before we kind of want to hear your final thoughts on everything. So in 1989, so now we're getting, you know, we're 10 years past the genesis of the lawsuit. We're, what is that, 26 years past the inception of the feud. Pete Rozelle announces his retirement as NFL commissioner at the league's owners meetings in California. Well, on his way out of the door, out his way out of the press conference, who stops and grabs him and gives him a big old freaking hug is the one and only Al Davis. And so, you know, he basically kind of like bygones be bygones, kind of a conversation with him. Some questioned on how genuine Al was in doing that, in approaching Pete in that way. But I always say, I trust the people that were there. I trust the people that get this stuff firsthand and not the secondhand, thirdhand information. And, you know, one of the people we trust most in terms of like reporting, or at least not reporting, but like testifying in what Al Davis was and who he was one of his, you know, towards the end of his life, confidants in the great Amy Trask, right? The first female executive ever to be hired. And she says she thinks it was genuine. She wasn't with the team during those times, but what she did have to say was, I was with the organization when Alan and Pete so let me back up. She wasn't with the team back in the day during the lawsuits, but she was there during this embrace, okay? And she says, I was with the organization when Alan Pete embraced at the owners meeting at which Pete announced his retirement. That embrace surprised many, as the dispute and litigation between the league and the Raiders was furious and intense. But as heated and as fierce as that fight was, Al and Pete shared a love of the league, and that shared love of league led to that spontaneous embrace. So, like, here you go. And then, you know, Rozelle died in 96, I want to say. So just not that long after, 7 years later. And then, of course, Al Davis passed away quite a few years later in 2011. Yep. But it's nice to know that these guys, you know, after these decades-long feud and all this stuff, like, they kind of had a moment of resolution at the end before they kind of like parted ways professionally and likely personally as well. So I wonder if they're going to get into that. And that's another thing. Like, sure. I wonder if that's where ESPN kind of ends that. Is that, like you said, is there a good guy, is there a bad guy? But, you know, like with any good story, you want to see resolution at the end. And they're sure. These two guys in this heated feud, like, ultimately ended in a resolution. So anyways, I kind of hope that's where it ends. But gosh, I've talked a lot tonight. I want to shut up and I want to get Swag Jeff. Take a few minutes, man. Give me some, not only just final thoughts, but overall thoughts, like, just kind of just riff, man. What do you got about all this whole thing going on Thursday?
So about the embrace at the owners meeting, you know, I think, you know, yes, I do think Al probably was sincere and was genuine in that. And, you know, bygones be bygones, you know, but, you know, a small part of him was probably like, yeah, I beat you, you handed me two Lombardi trophies, man. I got
36 million bucks.
Well, yeah. And all your money. It was genuine, but, you know, with a little dig, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's the right way to do it.
That's right.
So, you know, yeah, but, you know, this, you know, it, obviously every Tales from the Nation is a really cool thing that we do. And, you know, taking trips down memory lane and remembering all the cool, crazy, maybe not so cool things sometimes that's happened with this team, you know, but, you know, one of my favorite ones was the game after Al Davis passed away, the divine interception.
Oh yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Because we got to talk about Al so much, I became a Raider fan after Al had passed, you know, obviously, you know, one of the first things that was clear when I joined Raider Nation was that, you know, was the respect for Al, the respect that, you know, all fans had for him and the love that they have for him and the Davis family and all that stuff. And just to take a trip down memory lane and just see some of the things that he did for this organization and, you know, what he did to build this organization and, you know, the mentalities that still last to this day with this organization. It's just been, it's been incredible. And I love it. And I cannot wait for February 4th to turn this on and watch it. It's going to be an amazing thing. You know, this is going to be my Super Bowl this year because I hate the Super Bowl that we have this year yet again. So February 4th, I'm going to be wearing my Raider gear. I'm going to have my cold beers. I'm going to have my wings and my pizza and all that stuff. That's my Super Bowl.
Right on, so, dude.
So,
love it.
Yeah, it's going to be great, man. I can't wait to see it. And, you know, and yeah, it's going to be really, really cool.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, a lot of fun. So, hey, let's we didn't even talk about this off the air, but let's do another one of these after it. Like, let's do a follow-up.
Like a reaction show?
Yeah. Yeah, like let's do a follow-up to that, man, and just kind of see, like, you know, maybe the weekend or something like that. Or I know it's tough, you have young kids, tough to do stuff on the weekends, but, like, you know, maybe, like, I don't know, like, I'd love to do it that night even, but anyways, we'll schedule it later. But point being, though, is that, like, yeah, let's get back together and reconvene and kind of, like, see where it came out based on what our thoughts were and, like, you know, that kind of stuff. Who do you think we'll see? Like, who you know, sadly, Gene Upshaw's passed away. Al's gone. Roselle's gone. Musburger's in the trailer.
Yes.
So we're going to, and he's the guy that was there for the third Lombardi trophy, second time Roselle handed it to Pete, Pete handed it to Al, but, like, he was there. So I'm guessing Musburger's got to be a lock, right? Who else? Yeah. Anybody else you think we might see in there?
You know, I think we might see, I wouldn't be surprised to see either Madden or Flores, you know.
Oh,
I think
one Flores. Of them
might jump on, you know, especially Flores.
Flores. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, probably not Madden, but Flores. Good call, dude. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and I don't know. I mean, you might see Plunkett or, you know, or one of those guys.
Yeah. That's interesting. You know? Yeah.
One of those players, I mean, Howie Long, you know, I mean, you know, you might see a bunch of players and stuff, you know. I wouldn't expect to see, you know, Marcus Allen, you know, but
well, maybe, Maybe, you know, though.
Maybe.
I mean, you know, he was in the middle of, I mean, of course, you know, I think like a guy like Upshaw or like Shell, like those guys that were there for like, you know, for like the beginnings of it towards the end of it. Like those are the guys that are going to provide you like the really cool perspective. I wonder if I mentioned Amy Trask earlier. She's not shy to TV and does great on CBS and things. So I wouldn't be surprised to see her. So we're going to, so Flores, Musburger, Trask. I like your idea. Plunkett. I think you brought up two names I hadn't thought about. Plunk, cause I'm thinking more like front office-y kind of things, but I like your take on that. Cause Flores is the other guy. They're at the podium with them both times. But then I like the idea of Plunkett. Like that's interesting. Cause you know, Jim's also great on camera too. Right. So he'd be another good one to have on there.
Yeah. And I mean, and Howie Long is, you know, he's in broadcasting. So, I mean, he's all about having an interview. I mean, it wouldn't be surprised to see someone like him too.
Even though he kind of came in on that tail end of it, but still, I mean, he was part of the first ever Los Angeles Raiders championship. So absolutely. Yeah. That's good stuff, man. Man, this has been fun, dude. This has been fun.
I love the show.
Yeah. It's good.
I love the show. And not just because I'm in it. Just love it, man. It's so fun.
It is. It's fun. It's fun to go back and explore this stuff and talk about it. So yeah, we'll have another one of these. We'll have a part two of this coming up. Show thing. Cause you're right, dude, this is our Super Bowl. Sadly. Do you think, let me ask you one more thing. I got one more question for you that I thought about.
Okay.
Do you think that this was that the reason that ESPN announced this with their trailer and the reveal of this upcoming, do you think that the timing of it was because they thought this would finally be a year the Raiders would return to the postseason?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I guess I'd never really thought about it that way, but yeah, hell yeah. You know, I mean, because we should be there. We should have been there.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah. So, yeah. You know, and I thought about that.
And they checked in with us halfway through the season and said, oh, they're 6-3 and they beat the Chiefs. Hell yeah, they're going to be there. Let's release it.
Let's let it get, you know, because so much of the time, like, they'll release those, like, you know, like, you'll see the documentary of, like, the New Orleans Saints when they came back after Katrina. Like that will time with the postseason because you get a lot of there's a lot of reciprocity in the stories and symmetry and all that stuff. Like, to just have a Raider story out of nowhere, like.
Yeah, well, and, you know, and I think, too, you know, part of it could have also been, you know, that the Raiders got a new stadium. You know, this what this was all about, right?
Oh,
this is what Al wanted.
Oh, so, duh.
You know?
Oh, I'm so stupid. This is why you're the best co-host. You and Uncle Mosh are the two best co-hosts in the business. I didn't even, my dumb ass didn't even think about that. The Raiders finally got a new stadium.
What he wanted after all these years.
Gosh, I'm such an idiot. I wish I've had the boo button. I'd boo myself. Thank you,
Jeff. But you know what? I liked your idea better.
Well, I liked your idea better.
And I'm probably right. I'm probably right, you big dummy. But I liked your thought process better.
Man, I'm such a stupid.
Yeah, you're good.
Yeah. All right, that's the end of this show. It's gonna be Swag's fan cave next week too, man.
Yeah, it is. Oh my gosh!
All right, buddy, man, this is fun, man. This is good. To get back on here. Appreciate you taking time on a Sunday to sit down and do this, and we'll put this up tonight and enjoy the show, Raider Nation. You want to tell Raider Nation anything before we get out of here for the night, Jeff?
Yeah, follow us on all social media platforms, Raiders Fan Radio Podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Raiders Fan Radio. Find us on Twitch, where Murph is like, he's like Mr. Twitch now. He's twitching like crazy. So, yeah, so follow him, and, you know, we're going to be playing video games this offseason. We're going to be doing all kinds of fun stuff, and, you know, and just watch us wherever you are. Listen to us.
Hit the button.
And hit that damn button. You know, we're going to be on the YouTube. You know, get us to 2,500 subscribers or something.
Yeah, man, we need that. We need that. Hey, don't
need that.
and I'm glad.
We need
2,500. Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up about the Twitch too, because on Super Bowl Sunday, did you hear about what I talked about on Friday night show? The announcement that I made about the Twitch. We're gonna have a watch party on Twitch.
How fun!
Yeah, we're gonna watch all three I've got my little external DVD player set up here, like old school style, right? So on the Twitch, I'm going to play these DVDs and we're going to watch the three NFL films. Oh, we're going to watch the first, the Raiders 76. We're going to watch Super Bowl 15, the Cinderella Champions, and then we're going to cap it off with 18, Black Sunday, John Facenda, Marcus Allen running with the night. We're all going to watch it together on Twitch. We can chat on the Twitch, or we now have a Discord channel, Jeff. You can get on there and voice chat with us during the freaking watching of this. So
I love it.
We're going to go at noon Eastern, so 11 o'clock our time on Super Bowl Sunday. Can you make that?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. 11 o'clock Super Bowl Sunday. And they're only 20 some odd minutes each. So it'll just probably be like an hour, hour and a half total time. So it won't be a huge time commitment.
Gosh, it's going to be so much fun.
It's going to be so much fun. Cause I'm hoping that like all of our amazing listeners in the UK, like all those folks can jump in because it's like 7 o'clock over there, right? Sure. Or 6 o'clock or whatever. So they can jump on and join in with us and like,
so you can watch a good Super Bowl and then go to sleep afterwards.
And then go to sleep afterwards. And then none of us have to watch the stupid Buccaneers.
No, because you know, as a Raider fan, I've hated Twitter this week and all that stuff because they're like, well, who are you going to pull for? Who are you going to pull for? Tom Brady or the Chiefs? Neither. I don't want to pick. I hate all of you.
FAB, FKC, FTB. Yeah.
This Super Bowl is worse than last year. Sorry.
That's what I said too. Mosh said that
I hate the Super Bowl.
Mosh said that he hated the Niner one worse, but I'm kind of with you on this one.
Nah, because I got a personal hatred for Antonio Brown and I've hated Tom Brady my whole life. and then there's Mahomes and the Chiefs and Andy. No, I hate everybody. I hate everybody. Who's doing a halftime show?
The Weeknd.
I hate the Weeknd. I hate the damn Weeknd. I don't know anything about the Weeknd. No disrespect.
You don't? I thought you would. I figured you'd be a Weeknd guy because you kind of like that genre of music.
No. They should have had Ariana Grande play at halftime.
You love you some Ariana Grande.
Oh, yeah, I do. She's my icon on Netflix when I log in.
Is she really?
Oh, yeah.
Is that your celebrity wife?
Well, yeah. I love me some Ariana Grande, man. Hell yeah, bro.
That's so funny. Yeah. Instead, you got the Weeknd.
Instead, I got the damn Weeknd. The only person that I'm rooting for in the Super Bowl is the first female official. Good for you, lady.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's cool. Who's calling the game?
Is it Nance? Yeah, it's Nance and Romo, right? CBS?
Yeah, I hate Tony Romo.
Yeah.
You hate him. Stupid cowboy jackass. I hate that guy.
You hate everybody.
Oh, I like Jim Nance, though. Jim Nance in the Super Bowl.
There you go. I like Jim Nance, too. Welcome, friends.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do love Jim Nance. Jim Nance at the Masters is a nap waiting to happen.
Yeah, that's ASMR for you.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely. All right, man. We'll get out of here for the night. So thank you, Swag Jeff. Yeah, don't forget to just, especially on the heels of this show, watch the Super Bowl watch party with us on Sunday. Again, that's on our Twitch channel. Just search for Raiders Fan Radio, hit the follow, and we're right there, man. We're all going to watch those three things together, so it should be a good time.
Love it. Can't wait.
All right, hey, man. Thanks, Jeff. This is fun, dude.
Oh my gosh, this is so much fun.
So good. So good to have you back on doing Tales from the Nation.
Good deal, man.
Yeah. Okay, cool. All right, brother.
All right, man.
All right. Thank you, Raider Nation.
Good night.
Peace.